As already been announced, I will talk about symmetry breaking boundary conditions in conformal field theory. And I mean, the whole morning we learned about boundary conditions in integrable theories. So I thought it might be useful to have some sketch of the tools you use in conformal field theories to construct boundary conditions. And I should also say that I restrict myself to rational conformal field theories, just in contradiction to what Jörg Teschner did on Monday. Okay, let me start with mentioning some applications of boundary conformal field theory. I will not be very explicit because applications are really broad. For instance, you can use it in string theory, and the general interpretation is that if you have a bulk conformal field theory, for example, a conformal field theory defined on the complex plane, that describes some closed string background. So the geometry, the stringy geometry of some target space, and the idea is to have some two-dimensional worksheet which is embedded into the target space and which describes the propagation of the closed string. If you include boundaries, you also can describe the open string sector or the D-branes, and the corresponding worksheets now have boundaries. Here I label two boundaries by alpha and beta, and this worksheet again is mapped into the target space, and the boundaries correspond to the endpoints of the open strings, which can move on some dynamical objects which are called D-branes. And the CFT gives all the properties of these strings, the scattering amplitudes, and in this manner one can also derive the dynamics of these D-branes in terms of some non-commutative geometry, for instance, if one goes to some classical parameter space. Okay, the second application is a huge area of statistical physics. We already saw some vertex models, which in the continuum limit break down to some conformal field theory. I just mentioned the Ising model, or also the percolation, a critical percolation. In the talk of Zaleur, we encountered some examples in condensed matter physics, although he was mainly talking about the integrable theories. One can also describe quantum wires, the Kondo effect, in terms of conformal field theory in some particular regions of the parameter space. Okay, and last but not least, there's a close connection to integrable systems, because you can just, or many integrable systems are related to conformal field theories by doing some perturbations, like it's written here. So you start with some conformal field theory where the beta function is equal to zero, you do some perturbation, and you end up, in particular cases, with some integrable theory. Okay, so what are the tools that one uses in rational boundary conformal field theory? So, in principle, one starts with a conformal field theory on the plane. That means one has some symmetry algebra which splits into a holomorphic chiral algebra and some anti-holomorphic chiral algebra, or left and right moving, as you wish. And on this transparency, I will assume that the left and the right moving chiral algebras are isomorphic. So what one wants to do is to restrict the theory onto the upper half plane, where one has boundary condition alpha left of the origin, some boundary condition beta on the right of the origin, and then some boundary changing operators, which are denoted like that. And the basic ingredient of the way I treat the boundary theories is the boundary state, which has a which is restricted by two conditions. So first of all, it has to implement the gluing conditions, which arise because you cannot have the whole symmetry. the symmetry on the boundary in the boundary theory has to be broken from the whole left and right moving theory to just maximally one copy of the chiral algebra. And the gluing conditions say that the energy momentum tensor has to be identical if you go to the boundary, which just means that there's no leak of energy momentum. And then there's a second condition, or there are more conditions if you have other fields in your chiral algebra, and they may be related by some gluing automorphism like that. And the sign here depends on the conformal weight of the operators. So, but the boundary state is not just specified by these two conditions, because obviously these are linear conditions, and if you have one solution, you have an infinite number of them. But in addition, this boundary state also has to satisfy Cardy's constraint. And I try to depict Cardy's constraint here. So you have two possibilities to think about a cylinder diagram like that. So first of all, you can assume that the time direction runs in the vertical direction. You have some boundary state beta, which generates some which emits some closed string in the string language, which is then absorbed by the boundary state alpha, or by the Dibrain alpha. And this has to be equal, due to a modular transformation, to this open string diagram, where an open string or two open strings appear from nothing with boundary conditions alpha and beta on both sides, and then annihilate again. And on this side, you know that it corresponds to some open string partition function, so you can expand it in terms of the chiral algebra, or in the characters of the chiral algebra, which is preserved with non-integer, with integer non-negative coefficients, which are denoted by n, mu, and the two boundary conditions. On the left-hand side, you just have, as I said, the boundary state, then some propagation of the in the bulk theory, and then the absorption again. And these two results should be equal. And obviously, since this is a nonlinear relation, this gives strong constraints on the boundary states. Okay, and as I said, there's always a possibility to find some particular solution to these conditions if the theory is charge conjugate, which means that the partition function is charge conjugate. And in this case, one has the so-called Cardy states, which correspond to an automorphism which is chosen trivial. And it reads like that. So it may be expanded in terms of so-called Ishibashi states, which are elementary solutions of this equation. And the structure is that you have some modular S matrix. So that's not a scattering matrix or something like that. That's just the modular transformation matrix of the characters divided by the square root of the S matrix. And in this case, the spectrum is given by the fusion coefficients due to the Linnaeus formula. Okay. So why should we consider symmetry-breaking boundary conditions? First of all, they give more possible boundary conditions than you could construct using the method on the last page. That means more Dibrains which you consider in string theories. You could find endpoints of renormalization, boundary renormalization group flows, which have not been known before. And maybe more important is that there exists models which necessitate the introduction of symmetry-breaking boundary conditions, namely the heterotic CFTs, where the left-moving chiral algebra is different from the right-moving one. And in particular, in this talk, I will focus on so-called asymmetric cosets, which I will introduce later and construct the boundaries. Second, there are theories where the symmetry breaking is not necessary, but it's the only way to obtain some non-trivial boundary conditions. And the example I will present are defect lines with partial transmission and reflection. And so the plan of the remaining part of my talk is first the general construction of symmetry breaking boundary conditions, then I will introduce and discuss asymmetric cosets, and finally defect lines. Okay, so the general strategy is that we start with an arbitrary bulk conformal field theory. As I told you, it has a symmetry algebra which may be decomposed into a left moving chiral algebra and a right moving chiral algebra, and the spectrum, that means the Hilbert space of states, may be decomposed in terms of irreducible representations of these two chiral algebras. And that's just the most general expression where these numbers are known negative integers. Okay, so the strategy is, first of all, we have to find a common conformal subalgebra, which means that we have an embedding of a smaller algebra in both A and A bar, which inherits the energy momentum tensor from the algebras A and A bar. Second, we have to decompose the theory with respect to the smaller symmetry. That means we have to decompose these irreducible representations with respect to the smaller chiral algebras. And finally, after that's done, we can define the gluing conditions and the boundary states with respect to the smaller algebra A reduced. Okay, and obviously one can always take this A reduced to be the Virasoro algebra, which is contained in both A and A bar. But since we want to stay in a rational framework, we assume that the decomposition with respect to A reduced times A reduced bar is still a finite sum of representations, so that we have this kind of decomposition. And obviously, it is almost impossible to get to define the boundary theories for these kind of Hilbert spaces, because that would mean that we could right away construct all boundary theories for all bulk theories. And that's not possible, so we have to restrict ourselves a little bit in choosing the modular invariant partition function, for instance. Okay, that was fairly abstract, so let's make it a little bit more concrete. We start with the Vestomino-Novikov-Witten model, which has a chiral symmetry which is based on two copies of an affine Katz-Moody algebra at level k. The spectrum will be assumed to be charge conjugate. That's the simplest choice. And the natural conformal embedding, which are also rational, are given by this decomposition, where one takes some affine subalgebra H at level xk, where x is a characterization of the embedding of the subalgebra H into G, and the part which is can be deduced by the GKO construction. The spectrum may then easily be determined to be given by this. So we now have in both the left and the right moving part two Hilbert spaces for each of these two chiral algebras. And it is a straightforward exercise to see that the boundary states are schematically given by these expressions, where one has the typical factor S over square root S for the G part and some rather untypical factor of S over S for the H part. And as you see, there's no square root here in the second part, and that can be interpreted to be related to some sort of permutation brains. Yes, or the same factor appears if you consider permutation brains where you have a gluing automorphism which interchanges two factors. Okay, and one can also calculate the spectrum, and it is given by this expression where also lots of fusion coefficients enter, and as you see, it's manifestly symmetry breaking since the label B and C don't agree in in general. Just if you take R prime and R to be equal, then D has to be 0, and then you see that due to the second factor, B and C also have to be equal. Okay, so let's present the first example, asymmetric cosets. And the aim of the whole construction is to provide new string backgrounds, new models of conformal field theory. And if I am talking about string backgrounds, one should notice that these Z and W models are related to group manifolds. They have some invariance with respect to left and right multiplication, where the left multiplication is purely holomorphic and the right multiplication is purely anti-holomorphic. And as I said, it has a symmetry of two copies of a Kac-Moody algebra. One then may gauge a subgroup H, and one arrives at a description of the coset G over H, where one uses this identification. And in contrast to the usual usual construction of cosets, we are allowed to use two different embeddings of H to perform this gauging. So we use some embedding epsilon L for the left-hand side and some embedding epsilon R for the right-hand side. And the symmetry algebra would then be given by two copies of coset chiral algebras, where both of them are constructed using the usual GKO construction. But in fact, they might be different. And in particular, one has to be careful that the levels of these two H-affine chiral algebras, of these two H-factors, are identical. That's due to modular and conformal invariance, which one wants to preserve. Okay, so that was really abstract. So let's present a model where things get more obvious. There's a very nice model which has already been introduced at the end of the 80s by Guadagnini, Martellini, and Minchev. And there we take a group manifold which consists of two factors. So we have a factor G1 and a factor G2, and both of them have a common subgroup. And we choose the embeddings epsilon L and epsilon R such that the subgroup H is embedded in the first factor if we use the left embedding, and it's purely embedded in the right factor if we use the right action. And obviously, the symmetry algebra then is given by a G1 over H times G2 chiral algebra for the holomorphic sector, and by G1 times times the coset algebra for G2 over H for the anti-holomorphic sector. And that illustrates that we really deal with some heterotic CFT where the left and the right moving chiral algebra are completely different. But it's in fact possible to write down a modular invariant partition function. I will not go into the details because that's rather complicated to introduce the notation. But it's very easy to see that there is some common subsymmetry of both the left and the right moving chiral algebras, which is just given by the product of these two parts of the coset chiral algebra G1 over H, G2 over H, and H itself. So that amounts to dividing G2 by H for the holomorphic chiral algebra and dividing G1 by H in the anti-holomorphic chiral algebra. And again, one may construct the boundary states, and there are some very complicated technical things like field identification and selection rules, but the rough result reads like that. So you have some factor, the usual factor of Cardy for G1 and for G2, and in the H part you again have some different factor, which is now 3. So you have the square root of S to the 3. Okay, so that was a part on asymmetric cosets. Now go to the boundaries, to the defect lines. So first of all, why do I speak about defects if I talk about boundary conformal field theory? And it's very easy to see that one can map a defect or a junction if one deals with quantum wires to a boundary theory using the folding trick. That had already appeared in the talk of Zaleur, and I will be a little bit more explicit here. So we have two conformal field theories, one living on the negative part of the real axis, one on the positive part, and in the middle we have some defect which couples both theories. Then one might simply fold the plane and one then has a description of the conformal field theory in terms of the tensor product. That's because the bulk properties on the CFTs don't depend on each other, they don't interact, and one has a common boundary where they actually interact, and the defect then is described by a boundary in this tensor product, so by a boundary state in the product conformal field theory. It is then very easy to see that one can describe decoupled systems using this picture. So two conformal field theories which don't interact, that simply amounts to have two independent conformal field theories with a factorizing boundary state. So more interesting is the case of full transmission. Oops. So full transmission, and obviously to have full transmission one has to demand that both conformal field theories are identical, because otherwise the currents cannot be mapped from one side of the defect to the other one. And in this case one can use the permutation automorphism which is stated here. So currents which come, which move to the right on the lower line are mapped to left moving currents on the upper line and vice versa. So these are also pretty well known and correspond to permutation brains. But to my knowledge it was an open question to treat non-trivial defects where one wants to have partial transmission and partial reflection. Okay, so let's deal with that case. We assume that we have two different conformal field theories, one living on the negative part, one living on the positive part, and as we saw before, the general strategy if we want to have some transmission is to determine the chiral algebra which is actually transmitted. That can obviously not be all of the chiral algebra of the both CFTs because they are different, but if they have some common subgroup, one can extract this common subgroup and transmit the currents which are living in these chiral algebras. To remain in the conformal region, one also has to take the Kosar construction with respect to the rest, but since these are different, they must be reflected and cannot be transmitted. So to rephrase the problem, what we want to do is to construct boundary states in a theory which has a chiral algebra CFT1 over H, some abstract coset, CFT2 over H, another abstract coset, and then two copies of H, one coming from each decomposition. Okay, I will skip that. And let me be a little bit more explicit for the case that we have two conformal field theories or two Bestuminov-Novikov-Witten theories with charge conjugate partition function. In this case, one can easily write down the Hilbert space of the product theory. It is just given by this expression. Afterwards, one can decompose it with respect to the smaller algebra, that means the coset part and the H part. Then one arrives here at this slightly more lengthy expression, and the boundary states then roughly read like that. So one again has the usual Cardi-type expression for the G1 part. One has another Cardi type expression for the G2 part, and one has an unusual expression for the H part, when now the exponent of this H S factor would be 4. And that again corresponds to some permutation brain where you have an automorphism of order 4. Okay, and then one can also calculate the spectrum again, and it is given by this rather lengthy expression of fusion coefficients, where the indices are all summed up. And again, one sees that the boundary spectrum is symmetry breaking manifestly because these labels D, B, C, and E don't have to be identical. And to conclude, so we encountered symmetry breaking boundary conditions rather naturally in heterotic conformal field theories, and in particular, I presented the example of asymmetric cosets. There's a much deeper story behind this asymmetric cosets. I just sketched one particular very simple example, and I also showed that in the treatment of defect lines, one is naturally led to symmetry breaking boundary conditions. I presented the explicit construction for WZ and W models, and for coset series, or for one particular kind of coset series. And let me remind you that they are based on the decomposition of the chiral algebra A of G into the coset part and the part of some subalgebra. Or in the coset case, one can take some intermediate group which sits between H and G and split the coset chiral algebra in two coset chiral algebras. And of course, there are also some open problems. As you saw, we just dealt with a universal construction of the boundary states and defects, but what's still open is to derive physical properties to determine the correlation functions, and what maybe is also quite interesting is to determine the Casimir energies if you have two defects and some force between them. That was treated in a paper of Bachers and collaborators recently for some free boson. And what I've been working on recently was the generalization of the whole procedure to non-oriented surfaces. So, and that's the end of my talk. It should also provide a representation of the fusion algebra, but in this case, obviously, of the fusion algebra of the smaller symmetry. I mean, an asymmetric coset is only asymmetric as long as you really keep the asymmetry, but as soon as you break down to the common subsymmetry, it's not asymmetric anymore. And then it reduces to the usual problem. Yeah. I mean, it's just a more complicated partition function. But in such a way that you can actually deal with the problem.